Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Reaction Podcast Classic. I'm your host, Wayne Lou. I'm joined by Big V. Big V, how you doing, man?
Not bad. Making the best of this, you know, unforeseen situation. But, you know, got a lot of time for TV shows and movies and catching up on all that kind of stuff. I'm now caught up on Mr. Robot and Parks and Rec. Couple seasons into Community. Wow. I've been reading some books, but yeah, keeping myself busy, man.
Wow.
How about you?
A regular Nick Nurse over here. Oddly, I don't know. I'm finding the days are going by kind of quickly, but it's like I'm not doing that much within them. They just kind of right. Like pass by at like a regular rate. But
I feel
yeah.
Like the biggest thing is routine. It's like once you kind of figure out a new pattern to your day, it gets all right. Like those first few days, that first week or so was like, all right, What the hell do I do now?
Yeah, because you're like halfway between like, am I like in work mode or am I in vacation mode? Then you got to settle into like a regular kind of thing.
Yeah.
Part of my regular routine right now is torturing myself and watching the most infamous loss in Raptor history. Can we start there? So we're doing the Game 7 between the Raptors and the Sixers. No, not Game 7 last year, which would be not necessarily something to go back and revisit right now because it's only a year ago, but the original Game 7 against Philly. This is what was the exact date of this? May 20th, 2001. Where the Raptors failed to advance to the Eastern Conference Finals. You'll most likely remember it as the game where Vince Carter missed that potential game winner at the final buzzer. V, I'll just ask you first, like, where were you during all this?
I was in Dubai, man. So I probably became a basketball fan the year before this.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, in Dubai, it was like you never got to see any live games. And back then, I was just a cricket and soccer fan, but I just so happened to be watching one of the sports channels one day. And this show, I think it was called NBA Action. It was like a half hour show. And it always ended with a top 10 countdown.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when it was like Vince was all over this top 10 countdown week in, week out. And so that's how I became a Raptors fan, just like wanting to see Vince on these highlights over and over. And so, yeah, I mean, I remember even back then on PC, I had the like NBA Live 2000 on CD. I used to play that all the time. So fast forward to these playoffs, because of the time difference, these games were happening early in the morning, right, when I was going to school. And I remember, you know, dial up internet, trying to get on, check the score before I leave. And it was late fourth and I had to leave. I had to catch my bus. So I had no idea what was happening. Do my 8 hours at school, coming back the whole time. I'm just like, man, what happened? Did the Raptors win? Come back and then I see on NBA.com that Vince missed the shot and obviously the Raptors are out, Sixers are through. To be honest, at the time, I wasn't too sad about it because I was also a huge Allen Iverson fan.
Yeah.
And just like the numbers that these two guys were putting up throughout the series, it was just super entertaining. And for someone that was just like getting into basketball, it was hard not to like be all in on both those guys.
Yeah. I mean, this was a no-loss situation. I was thinking midway through this game, I was like, the officiating looks pretty fair, and I'm not one of those conspiracy theorists, but I'm just like, you know, if the NBA had a choice between AI moving forward or Vince moving forward, I think they would have been fine with both options. And to your point about this, the two of them being the focal stars, I mean, like, yeah, these two teams were both like one star teams, right? And I think maybe one star teams were way more common back in this era than they are today. Obviously, you don't really see much one star team, but for Philly, like literally every play went through AI, and it doesn't surprise you to see that he had like 54 early in the series. And for the Raptors, not every play went through Vince because he wasn't the point guard like AI was. But Vince, like, he had 50-point games earlier in the series. He had some massive, 30-point efforts, close to 40 points. And it was, like, it was really an incredible battle between just, like, star players. And, you know, honestly, part of me kind of misses that kind of basketball. Do you know what I mean? Like, just, like, the best player versus the other best player. And then the rest of the team is just kind of around to like set screens and make some timely, you know, open shots and stuff like that. But really just mano a mano kind of stuff. So I was kind of nostalgic for that factor. But ultimately, like, yo, this game was just stressful, right? Like, obviously, game sevens are always stressful. It's in Philly, too, which, as we saw last year's playoffs, it's not easy to go to Philly and win. The Raptors got that one win that they needed, which was Kawhi hitting that game winner in game three. But like everything else, like, they got destroyed in Philly in game three, they got destroyed in Philly in game six. That's a really, really, frenzied crowd. And I think at this time it was even more that same effect because, you know, last year it felt like the Philly fans really responded to Embiid, who was like jeering them on, and like, you know, Simmons doesn't really do it as much. But Jimmy Butler as well, sort of like just really playing into the crowd. And like AI is like the ultimate playing into the crowd kind of guy. Like the famous, like, you know, he would cup his hand to his ear and just like let the fans hear. And like the fans loved AI too. Yeah. So it was just incredible atmosphere. To be honest, I'm a little surprised the Raptors even made it so close. Just based off that. What was one thing that really struck you when you watched it back, especially at the start of the game?
So I actually had a lot of time yesterday because I was on hold with Service Canada for like 3 hours.
Okay.
Trying to get my shit sorted out. And so I actually ended up going back and watching game two of this series as well. Oh, and sure. So one thing that's interesting that I found was the series starts off with George Lynch starting for the Sixers, and he's primarily defending Vince. Yep. And it seems like both games one and two, he picked up early foul trouble. Then he got injured. And in that game two, Jermaine Jones provided a bit of a spark in that game. And so I think that's what ultimately led to him being in the starting lineup. And then Aaron McKee ended up being in the starting lineup in place of Eric Snow. And I think that really helped Philly. It was almost like they suddenly, you know, spaced out the floor by accident. Because you think about guys like Aaron McKee and Jermaine Jones, for that time, like, their shooting was pretty good compared to Eric Snow and George Lynch anyway. So offensively, I thought it gave them a boost. Defensively, you know, probably around the same. And so I thought that was something that sort of played into their hands that they probably weren't even planning for. And it just worked out that way. And that's probably why the Raptors made the adjustment too, of, you know, Chris Childs going out of the starting lineup and Mo Pete coming in and get a bit more size in there. So I think, you know, the things that stand out to me is like you're watching these end of quarters. There's clearly no concept of the two for one back then. Just all around, like you said, in terms of the one on one, a lot of ISO for Iverson, a lot of ISO for Vince. So, you know, just clunky in general. And you're thinking about the guys that Iverson is playing with. I mean, Nick Nurse would have boxed and won the hell out of that now.
Oh, definitely.
and so, you know, I think overall, you know, you look at, it was a throwback to how important the big men were back then as well. Still, like, you look at the impact Dikembe Mutombo had on that game. And then I don't know if we want to get into this now, but I thought, you know, as much as we talk about the Vince shot at the end, Antonio Davis, like, that knock he picked up on his left shoulder,
yeah.
Or his hand in general. Like, I thought that really impacted the game, because those minutes that he went out really hurt the team in that third and fourth quarter.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, well, two things with the injuries that was really impressive to me. One, the fact that AD picked out that injury, but he came back into the game and then hit two clutch jumpers down the stretch. You know, as you mentioned, like, he was, I mean, Vince was the best player, like, and he was definitely getting double teamed and stuff like that, but, like, Antonio Davis was really, really good. Like, maybe if we're drawing comparisons to 2019 Game 7, Antonio Davis is like a souped-up Serge Ibaka in this case. Just, like, hitting every jumper, no fear whatsoever, a veteran coming in, playing some pretty good defense as well. And as you mentioned, he only, like, despite the injury and despite the fact that he had foul trouble, he had four fouls early in the third quarter and then a fifth foul early in the fourth quarter, he still plays 41 minutes. But in those 7 minutes that he sat, the Raptors were minus 12. He was a plus 11 in his 41 minutes. So it's almost inconceivable that they actually lost this game. So it was impressive to me, like, just how important AD was, how much he really stepped up in this case. And, his skill set just really fit what the Raptors needed in this moment, because both teams kind of went to the same approach. Like, the Raptors aggressively double team Allen Iverson, and the Sixers aggressively double-teamed Vince Carter. And so they were really trying to force them to become playmakers. And AD was really, really well-suited to hitting that pick-and-pop jumper to just, like, you know, when Vince would be swarmed and stuff like that, AD would be open. And then the other injury really was AI picks up, like, he goes up for a floater. He ends up missing it, and he lands on his tailbone. And you could see him wincing throughout, like, most of the second half. And I'm like, yo, this is, like, a huge break. Like, the Raptors, I mean, it sucks for AI, but you got to capitalize on that. But instead, it's so incredible to me that in that third quarter, even after landing on his tailbone, he's able to hit a jumper. He's able to coast in for a layup. He's able to block Alvin Williams in transition, like a chase down block. And all this while he's, like, wincing after every single play. So,
yeah,
huge respect to, again, just, like, the fact that Game 7, like, you put it all on the line and, like, this is one of those exhaustive efforts where you look at both teams. They really did put their all on the floor. You know, in terms of the rosters as it was, you know, it was weird to me because, as you mentioned earlier, Dikembe, I walked away from this game so impressed but also so not impressed with Dikembe. I don't understand. Like, I don't even want to make this comparison because it's so lazy. But, like, he reminds me so much of Bismack Biyombo. Like, almost in every single skill set, you know what I mean? Like, this is 2016 Bismack Biyombo against the Cavs, where he's 2 of 7 for 10 points. He's winning 6 of 10 from the free throw line, but he has 17 rebounds and 9 offensive. And as a defensive presence, even though he only has one block, was just absolutely vital in shutting off the paint. The Raptors really couldn't get into the paint, and I felt like that's really one of the major reasons they lost, is just they had to hit a bunch of jumpers.
Yeah, I mean, Vince really didn't have any free throw attempts, right? I mean, go back, I can't remember him getting to the line that often. But yeah, again, I think it goes back to the start of the game. I look at Iverson, Dikembe setting the tone defensively, and they jump out to that early lead. And I think in a game 7, when you're always sort of playing from behind and exhausting so much energy that way, it just, you know, especially when you're on the road, I think that home team just gains that little extra confidence that it's sort of their night. And frankly, that was Iverson's season, right?
Like, oh, yeah.
That was the year he was MVP. He was All-Star Game MVP, scoring champion. So, you know, obviously he believed, like, everything was going to work out for him. But, yeah, I think when I look at, you know, obviously there's the narrative of the graduation and all that type of stuff, but I didn't feel like Vince played all too differently than what I saw in game 2. And I mean, frankly, if there is a bone to pick, I'd probably say his defense. I thought,
yeah,
you know, I thought he should have given more, like, the number of shots he gave Aaron McKee wide open and wasn't even, like, looking to contest. That was the thing that bothered me the most. I thought offensively, you know, I think both teams made it clear that they were going to say, hey, I mean, the Raptors were saying anyone but AI. The Sixers were saying anyone but Vince. And so I thought Vince did a good job of, you know, distributing the ball getting other guys involved. And, you know, we saw Alvin hit some big shots. Molpeet had a couple of nice stretches. And so offensively, you know, I don't think there's too much I could complain about, but defensively, I thought he was really lacking. And, you know, I don't know if that's focus or intensity or whatever it is, but yeah, I thought he gave Aaron McKee way too much space.
Yeah, I totally agree, man. Because, I mean, obviously I went into this game knowing the context of the graduation and the fact that he misses the final shot. So, and of course, it's Vince too. And I haven't watched a lot of prime Vince, so I wanted to really focus on him. And, you know, you're absolutely right. The defense is really what really put me off. Like, it's not even necessarily, you know, a lack of willingness to defend. It's just like the intensity wasn't there. Like, everyone else was playing at a game seven intensity, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, Allen Iverson, like, literally falls on his tailbone and is playing the whole game. And yeah. All these other guys are doing whatever. AD hurts his hand and he comes back into the game still. Vince, like, just defensively, that intensity just wasn't there. I wouldn't say it's DeMar DeRozan-esque, mm-hmm. but, you know, I would say when Vince gave his most effort in this game was, you know, trying to really jump and use his athleticism to get blocks at the rim. Didn't really successfully do that. Whereas the Raptors, what they really needed him to do was just key in, not even necessarily off the ball, but just, like, on his own man. To your point, down the stretch in the second half, he gets crossed up by Aaron McKee. He gets bodied by Aaron McKee on a baseline drive where Vince kind of semi-flops. But, of course, they're not calling that in a Game 7 setting on the road. And McKee's mm-hmm. able to, you know, get in the baseline and drive in for a layup. This is, like, 3 minutes left in the game. He gets caught in a screen, and he lets McKee hit an open jumper. This is, again, still in the fourth quarter. And then he doesn't box out McKee with 40 seconds left. Like, literally, he's just on the weak side. All you got to do is box out your man in that situation. He just completely doesn't. Like, it doesn't register in his mind to box out McKee, and McKee gets a key offensive rebound. This isn't a three-point game with 40 seconds left, or a one-point game with 40 seconds left. Like, you cannot give up that rebound whatsoever. So I kind of walked away kind of disappointed in Vince. Like, offensively, it's, you know, whatever. Like, he was double-teamed the whole time, so yeah. He didn't force a shot that much. He didn't really have the three-point shot going. So that's whatever. But, you know, he had 9 assists, which was a high for him in the 7-game series. But it was kind of different from the earlier games. And I'm really happy you watched the earlier games again, because, you know, maybe you can compare the difference. But, you know, in the first 6 games of the series, he averages 32 points per game. In those games, he took 29 attempts, 26 attempts, 29 attempts, 27 attempts, 31 attempts. One of those games, he was under 20, but that was game 5 when they got just blown out by like 30. And for that season, he averaged 27.6 points per game, and he was one of the best scorers in the NBA. In this one, he only takes 18 shots, and he plays all 48 minutes. So to you, like, is this more reflection of the way Philly changed their defense to really gear in on Vince, or is this maybe a sign of other things?
I think I would say the Sixers defense was the biggest factor, but I would also say that it almost like lulled him to sleep. It was almost to a point where, you know, he just had it in his mind that, okay, they're coming at me with a double team every single time, so I'm just going to trust my teammates. And I think maybe when you look back, you know, especially knowing what we know now, like, there were definitely possessions where it was like, okay, hey, you've got the advantage here. Yeah. Go for it. Like, I think there was definitely, so there was one possession I remember where there was a switch and he had Tyrone Hill, mm-hmm. A center on him on the perimeter, and Charles Oakley had the switch on to Aaron McKee in the post, mm-hmm. and Vince just sort of dumped it off, and it was like, dude, you're the one with the advantage there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, at the end of the day, you know, Vince, if he wanted, could have crossed up Tyrone Hill easy, got to the basket, probably gets fouled. Mm-hmm. So there were definitely a couple possessions like that where, you know, maybe if you want to contrast with Iverson, it was like any moment that Iverson was like, oh, they're guarding me one-on-one.
Yep.
I'm taking this to the basket. I'm getting my shot off, whatever it is. And so maybe Vince wasn't, you know, as aggressive in terms of identifying those opportunities. And I think this goes back to, we learned it with DeMar in Game 7 against Indiana. We learned it with Kawhi with his Game 7 against Philly. You got to empty the clip in this scenario.
Yep.
And I definitely wouldn't attribute that to Vince in this game.
Yeah, exactly. And that market difference in approach, as you mentioned, between him and AI is just completely different. Look, I'm not saying AI had a great game necessarily, right? Because if you look at the numbers...
And we're not saying that Vince is the reason that the Raptors lost this game either.
No. I mean, first off, the Raptors aren't even in a Game 7 without Vince doing what he did throughout the course of the series, all right? The Raptors aren't even in the playoffs without Vince doing what he was doing. So, like, it's not fair to just focus on this one thing. But I do think it's kind of interesting in terms of their approaches, because AI, you know, he comes up... If Vince hits that shot at the end, everyone's slandering AI for shooting 8 of 27, and people are hailing Vince for playing the team game and trusting his teammates and then hitting the big shot at the end, all right? So it's like narratives really shift on the fact that the ball moved like 2 inches too far, right? And it's probably the same way for what happened last year, and that's how championships were won. But nevertheless, I thought AI's approach was just completely different, as you mentioned, right? Because he shoots 8 of 27 from the field. That's under 30%. That's not good, right? He only gets to the free throw line 4 times. It's a really inefficient game from AI. But what he's able to do when you watch this game was he was just always a threat. Like, even though the Raptors sent double teams at him, I thought Alvin Williams did a pretty good job defending him. I thought the defense around him was pretty good. There was good paint protection as well to force AI to finish, you know, difficult floaters and stuff like that. But he was just aggressive. And at time, like after time, there was no let up by AI in terms of how he approached this game. And it's not even just the 16 assists, which, is a comical number. Cause like, I mean, there was only 32 field goals.
Considering the final score.
Yeah. Bro, they only made 32 field goals. AI had 8 of field goals made and 16 assists. So how does that even add up? But it was like, because he drove, that created opportunities for the rest of the Sixers to come in for offensive rebounds and get second chance possessions. And those aren't even assists. I guess those are now called Kobe assists or whatever. But yeah, like that was also a part of the Sixers offense, was just collapsing the paint and allowing their, you know, athletes to get it. And really, if you look at their athletes, like they had, I would say, even though the Raptors had more skilled offensive big men, the Sixers had just better athletes in the front court. Like the Kembe was like far and away just dominant physically. He got every single board. He got 9 offensive rebounds, and a lot of those went directly for putbacks or for free throws right afterwards. And the guys like AD and Charles Oakley, like they just couldn't hold them whatsoever. And then, you know, Jerome Williams, he comes off the bench and he just did nothing. I don't know. I appreciate AI for
pretty
this.
Bad mistakes.
Yeah.
I mean, there's that one turnover that he had after the Raptors secured the rebound, and where he's trying to pass it to Alvin Williams just to bring the ball up the court and threw it away. And I think that's another thing that stands out. When you look at what this team did in this game, like just the general lack of execution, the bad turnovers, the careless mistakes, like you have to do better in a Game 7. Like I remember Chris Childs throwing a wild alley-oop from the backcourt trying to find Jerome Williams. I mean...
Yeah, he wasn't even open, man.
He wasn't open. And I mean, Doug Collins right in that moment is like, hey, man, like Game 7, you're down 5 on the road. That is just not a play you attempt. And so when considering the veterans around Vince, I thought that was the thing that was probably most disappointing as well, the fact that they didn't handle the situation better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. But, you know, at the same time, though, I did feel like some of the other guys...
Came down to one shot.
Well, exactly. It came down to one shot. And some of the guys did hit some big shots, right? Like, big shot to Del Curry, all right? Because the Sixers are up 4 with under a minute left. The Raptors get a stop. They get the rebound. They're in semi-transition. Del Curry with 50 seconds left. Again, with the Raptors down 4, if he misses a shot, game's pretty much over. Right. But he's like in semi transition. He's like, yeah, I'll pull up for 3. I'm not even going to give Vince the shot. Nothing. Like, I'm not going to pass the ball.
Yeah.
I'm Del Curry. And he hits that shot, in transition, which again, the closeout was very close to make it 88-87 for Philly with under a minute left. And
he pulled a step.
He did. He literally pulled a step. And you can hear Mike Breen on the call. And Mike Breen's calling this game for NBC. But he says, bang, Curry from downtown. And I'm like, oh, well, this is,
yeah,
that's amazing. That's really amazing. Big shout out to Del Curry. I thought, you know, in terms of the other supporting cast, I think given the relative caliber of players that we're talking about, they did okay. Like I said, you know, we already talked about AD and the fact that he had 23 points and 11-15 shooting. That's as good as you can imagine. Charles Oakley, you know, right, he could have done a little bit better in terms of like holding down the fort defensively. Looked kind of old and stiff. But ultimately, he gives you 11 and 10 with 4 assists and 2 steals in 38 minutes. Like, that's not terrible. Alvin Williams, I think defensively, you know, offensively, he only has 8 points on 4 of 11 shooting. But defensively against AI, did as good of a job as you can really reasonably ask for. AI shot, you know 30% from the field. Mo Pete, okay, weird that he started. But in the second half, he comes in, bangs 3 jumpers, gives the Raptors a huge boost, and the Raptors are able to overcome this deficit. And even Chris Childs comes off the bench, you know, I thought, honestly, this game was really threatening to become a blowout in the first half because the Sixers were up like 29-14 or whatever. And Chris Childs kind of did that J.J. Redick thing in last year's Game 7 where it was like, all right, well, we're down. We're going to come in to this veteran. He's going to have ultimate confidence. He's played in the playoffs before. He's hit big shots in the playoffs before. I'm going to come in and bang a couple of jumpers to get my team back into the game. And so I thought even Chris Childs was okay, really. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
No. I should say it's probably in, you know, reference to the start of that game, right, and where that's where you expect like the veterans to be like, okay, you know, we're going to take care of business. We're going to, you know, be smart with the basketball and all that. But yeah, pretty much from the start of the third quarter, like that was a different team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the first half, the Raptors that showed up, I thought that was pretty disappointing. But yeah, from the second half onwards, like, that was the team that you maybe expected to see right from the start of the game. And I thought the execution was much better on both ends of the floor. And that's probably why they came back and were able to make it close in the end. But yeah, ultimately, I think, you know, in a game where both teams were sort of trying to take away the other team's superstar, it was going to come down to which of the role players made bigger plays. And then you look at some of those jumpers that Eric Snow made.
Oh my God.
You look at some of those shots that Jim made. You know, those are the ones that really hurt.
Eric Snow, man. Okay, but here's the thing. I didn't watch a lot of basketball this time. So, like, my impression of Eric Snow was, like, Cavs Eric Snow. And I'm like, he's not going to do anything in this game. And then he comes off the bench. And, like, in the fourth quarter, he hits a whole bunch of, like, open top-of-the-floor jumpers. And, like, just to support AI. And I'm like, damn, like, this guy's killing us, man.
I guess
this was his peak, too, because he was averaging this season 10 points a game. He was, like, a consistent, like, 12-point-per-game guy. But, like, yeah, man, like, it's mostly
a game back then was, like, a solid 15, 16 now.
That's fair. And he was a good defender. I thought he played good defense in this game, too. But, yeah, definitely the supporting players for Philly definitely stepped up here. And I honestly just think that, like, you know, it ultimately is a really, really close game. And it's just, you know, these are just the margins. And we understand that, especially now that the Raptors have won the championship, you have some very, very narrow margins. And this is literally a one-point loss on the road. Honestly, the Raptors, it's not like they came and embarrassed themselves whatsoever. Like, it sucks that they missed a shot. It sucks that the franchise started going downhill after this point. Because Vince gets hurt and, you know, like, they make some bad signings. They trade picks for Dikembe, or not Dikembe. They trade some picks for, Hakeem. And, you know, eventually Vince leaves and T-Mac leaves and it's like, you have nothing left. But it's not like they embarrass themselves. And I always thought that there was just like some sort of big choke job or whatever. Didn't really feel that way. So,
no.
Before we get to 3 stars, is there anything else that really stood out to you?
I would just go back to that game too and say that was a real missed opportunity. I mean, the Raps were up 1-0 in the series. They jumped out to the early lead. We're up 35-21 in the second quarter. I just thought they kind of let go of the rope there. Maybe it was just the confidence they were feeling themselves a little bit coming off the win against the Knicks, then going up 1-0. Now they've got a big lead again. And then Iverson kind of took over. He had 54 in that game. So I thought that was a missed opportunity. That was the game where I was watching and I'm like, man, the Raptors really have control here. And then they were the ones that let it slip. And this game I thought was kind of the opposite, where I felt like Philly was in control most of the way. And then the Raptors were the ones who made that push.
Right. Yeah, it, man.
By the way, watching that game too, just to give you a sign of the times and how things have changed, Iverson drove to the rim, and the commentator literally said, "Iverson driving in unmolested."
Word. Was it Marv Albert?
Oh gosh. No, I don't even want to touch that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's been cool. Not just with the Jordan doc. But just like seeing this era, because again, like, okay, at this point I was in Canada, but I wasn't consuming a lot of popular media, wasn't even a fan of the Raptors, wasn't really watching, didn't think I had cable, to be honest. So I wasn't really fully aware, and I didn't really remember some of the fashion and stuff like that. So it's just kind of like a cool flashback to like look back at, like, oh, like AI has a Chinese character on his neck, like tattooed. That was real popular back then. At least his, like, was like the correct character. It didn't say pork fried rice or whatever. It said loyal, which I thought was really cool. It actually looked pretty good on AI, to be honest. He had the answer. What would you really even call that? Like an elbow, like not the elbow sleeve, because he wore that on his shooting arm, but like, right. He had another one that was kind of like a tennis kind of wristband, but he wore it on his elbow, and it said the answer on there. That was pretty cool. And then, yeah, just the fashion of the guys on the bench, man. Everybody looked like, I don't know, everyone looked like MJ. Like, just, like, big-ass suits, and they kind of were boxy and looked like Lego characters. Yeah, so.
Yeah, yeah.
It was fun to look back. All right, so 3 stars for this game, for the Raptors. Who would you give the first star to?
Man, I think I might go with Antonio Davis.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, I thought he was incredible, you know, making those big shots that we talked about, just looking like the sort of heart and soul of the team.
Yeah,
I know a lot of people sort of associate that with Alvin Williams from that team, but I thought, you know, the hunger, the fight that he showed, you know, taking, like, I don't know what happened in terms of the injury, but it seemed like he popped his shoulder or something happened there. And so for him to keep battling through that and be like, no, we got to get this win. We can worry about whatever happens after. I would give the first star to him.
Yeah, I agree. I was overall impressed by his skill level, man. Because early in the game, he had a face-up game. Like, he could face-up, jab-step, and then fade away for a jumper. And I'm like, you look at him because he's built so solid, and you know, you're just, maybe because I'm used to watching so much basketball nowadays where big men really aren't making these kind of moves. But I was like, wow, this guy hit the mid-range is on lock. Like, he could really make a couple of moves. I mean, this was a year he made the All-Star team too. So it felt like he was
a baseline driving dunk.
Yeah, that one too. And it's just like, yo, wow, this guy really has some skills. And whatever, it doesn't take much to stop Dikembe Mutombo in the post. Like, Dikembe really has Big Mac Biombo's post game, where like if he brings the ball low and gets stripped, he'll like lose the ball going up and like bop it off someone's head. Like, Dikembe was a hilarious post player. They really did feed him in the post quite a bit for a guy who clearly doesn't have a post game. But AD did a pretty good job, generally speaking, in terms of defending Dikembe whenever Dikembe got the ball to shoot, too. So I agree, man. 23 points, 9 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, 2 blocks, 11 of 15 shooting in 41 minutes, a plus 11. Honestly, if he doesn't get hurt and has to sit, or if he doesn't get into some foul trouble, like, he, you know, the Raptors probably swing this game. AD was really, really good, man. And consistently good throughout the game. Like, he was really the steadying force early on and was, you know, one of the clutch scorers later in the game. So, second star is much tougher for me because I want to give it to Vince, but I don't feel fully sure of it because I just, there's something about this game with Vince that doesn't sit right with me. So I might, I might honestly have to give this one to like either Alvin Williams or Del Curry, which sounds insane, really, because Del Curry is 7 points in 17 minutes off the bench. Yeah, he's a plus 7. Yeah, he hits a clutch 3, but he didn't even factor that much into this one. And then Alvin Williams, he goes scoreless in the first half. But, you know, I will give him the second star because in the third quarter, he and Mo Pete start hitting some shots. Both of them were scoreless as starters in the first half. Second half and third quarter, they come out hot. They give the Raptors the lead. And I thought Alvin just throughout played pretty good man defense against AI. Like, AI, obviously, this is prime AI. Like, he's like stepping over, you know, Tyronn Lue and shit. Like, this is like incredible AI. He has 50 points earlier in the series. For Alvin to hold him to, what, 8 of 27 shooting? Like, it's pretty good. And he had multiple blocks on AI as well. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm a little flagrant for that. But I'm giving Alvin Williams a second star.
I think it's a toss-up between Vince and AI, and Alvin. Because, again, you look at the key to the Raptors winning that game. Like, they were going to have to take AI out of the game. Yeah. And so the person who's at the forefront of that plan is Alvin. So, again, to hold him to 8 of 27. Now, if guys like Jermaine Jones and Eric Snow and McKee just hit shot after shot after shot, you can't really put that on Alvin. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm with you. And, yeah, again, the shots that he made early in the third to help give the Raptors some momentum. Mm-hmm. Yeah, toss-up between Vince and Alvin for me. But, yeah, I can definitely see the case for going with Alvin.
Right. And then, yeah, Vince Carter, 20 points, 7 rebounds, 9 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks. Pretty good. But 6 of 18.
And got to respect that he played all 48 minutes.
Yeah, he did. He really did. And even to my point earlier, I didn't feel like he was playing that great defensively. He still has 3 steals and 2 blocks. That's the thing. When a superstar is a superstar, you really believe that he's capable of doing anything.
Right.
And you kind of expect him to do everything in that sense. And I think that's probably why I'm walking away, a little bit disappointed. Because, it's just like when you compare what Kawhi did in Game 7 versus what Vince did in Game 7, obviously totally different situations, but... yeah, it's clear. There's definitely levels. In terms of the Gerald Henderson Award, man, there's a lot of options here because, as we mentioned, a lot of guys for Philly really stepped up. But for me, it has to be Jermaine Jones because A, never heard of Jermaine Jones. B, I don't think he really did much in the NBA. And when I looked it up, this season, Jermaine Jones averaged 4.7 points per game. Did not start. Now, as you mentioned, George Lynch gets hurt, so they need someone to fill in. But Jermaine Jones more than filled in. All right. Jermaine Jones had 16 points and 4 rebounds, 6 of 9 shooting. I would say he was like if you combined both Mike Scott and James Ennis into one player in last year's series against the Sixers. And if you took both those contributions, mixed in a little Greg Monroe as well. And I'm like, yo, this guy was because you just didn't expect him to do anything. And the fact that he gave you 16 points, which is the third leading scorer on the Sixers. Efficiently, and he put a lot of guys in foul trouble. Like he gave AD his 5th foul and made him sit. Like, wow, he was really good for a guy who I thought was just nobody. You know?
Yeah, I think it's got to be Jermaine Jones for sure. And then, I thought even those minutes that he played against the Raptors second unit, I thought you could see the frustration the team kind of had with Jerome Williams in those situations because. Yeah. I mean, that's where, again, that spacing kind of helped Philly, right? Because JYD was just too big to kind of guard him. And so Jermaine Jones was making cuts, getting open shots, sort of beating him in transition kind of thing. And so I thought for sure he gets the Gerald Henderson. I mean, that's not the type of guy you want to get beat by in a game 7, but ultimately he was the difference maker.
This is why home court advantage is important too, because you get hustle guys – who at home are entirely different than hustle guys on the road. And you look at it. If this game was at home, probably JYD is the one having 16 points off the bench, with this surprise contribution. But instead, he goes on the road. He plays 16 minutes, has 0 points, has 3 fouls. It sucks. But honestly, a lot of good candidates because, again, it was mostly – it wasn't AI beating the Raptors necessarily. It was the 16 assists as a reflection of how much everyone else around him stepped up, right? Like Eric Snow. There's a real good case to give Eric Snow to Gerald Henderson because he hit a whole bunch of clutch jumpers in the fourth quarter that ultimately – I think he had the game-winning basket. You look at – okay, Tyrone Hill, not so much. But Aaron McKee played out of his mind. And, in the fourth quarter, he outplayed Vince. Like, he bullied Vince. He literally knocked him over on a drive and finished with a layup. Like, I don't know what you call that other than bullying. So,
wow. Yeah, I mean, I didn't. Did you know that Aaron McKee won the Sixth Man of the Year that season?
No.
Yeah. This guy stepped into a starting role and just dominated, man.
And this is another guy where I'm like, didn't know he was that good. And then I looked up the numbers. Wasn't that good. Like he was also having, I think, a career year. He averaged 11.6 points per game that season. He came off the bench like 43 games as compared to 33 starts. Shot 47% from the field. Honestly, pretty good as a guard. To be honest, he has a little varied game. I can kind of see it. But yeah,
you want to hear something wild?
What?
You know that list I made of like the most points by a trio in NBA playoffs?
Oh, wait, hold on. Who was at the top of that list?
The Toronto Raptors with Kawhi Leonard, Pascal Siakam, and Kyle Lowry.
Okay, so most points of all time.
Beat a 32-year record held by the Celtics, Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, and Dennis Johnson. Thought that was noteworthy. But what's wild is Iverson scored so much in these playoffs that Philly was 18th on that list.
Yo, that's unbelievable, man.
So the trio of Iverson, McKee, and Dikembe Mutombo is 18th on that list.
Yo, that's actually insane, man. But, man, so much respect to AI, man. Just, he's incredible, like, man.
To put it in perspective, they are 18th in 19th and 20th. Are the 16 and 17 Cavs with LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin Love.
Bro. Okay. And that was an era where people shot threes, too. No one really shot threes like that this time.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's wild. That is wild. AI for this playoff run, 723 points scored. That's nuts, man. Yeah, okay, so Patrick Patterson Award.
Oh, man.
We're going to give this to Vince? What are we saying?
No, honestly, I'm going to go with JYD.
Yeah, JYD.
1 point, yeah. 2 rebounds, 16 minutes. Just really didn't provide much.
This is literally a Patrick Patterson stat line.
Yeah, there were better days ahead for sure.
Yeah.
But this was not something he'll put down in his Raptors history too much.
Yeah. Yeah, it was disappointing for sure. But again, like, you know, okay, I was joking about the Vince thing, but really the only reason you would give it to Vince is I think the legacy of it, right? Because all people really remember from this game is not Antonio Davis having 23 points. It's not about Charles Oakley looking stiff, but also being a pretty weirdly shrewd passer. It's not about Al Williams' defense. It's not about all this other stuff, clutch shots by Del Curry or Chris Childs. It's really about Vince. I think that's the legacy of this thing. It's because, you know, he never played in a bigger game than this for the rest of his career. And, you know, he's like, yeah, he's played like 20 plus years. But this was the biggest game of his life and he ever played in. And all people ever remember is that he missed the final shot and the circumstances of the graduation, which I also went back to look at because I wanted to make sure that it wasn't, I don't know. I wanted to make sure that if I'm talking about this game, I knew what was going on. And there was lots of reporting, a lot of coverage. So the context here is that Vince, you know, he promised his mom that he would graduate, which I think is extremely noble. And that a lot of athletes, you know, make this promise to their parents, but they don't ultimately go back and complete it. Vince, I think he played 3 years in college, and then he did the last year on correspondence. But still, you know, it's great that he achieved this. And it's just unfortunate that the day of the graduation was the same day of Game 7. Again, I'm sure he didn't plan it this way. He had no chance to do so. But this is a decision that, you know, I don't fault Vince at all for making for himself. Right? I just think that, like, this is a very important day. This is a very important day for his family. He went with his mom. And the Raptors, you know, Larry Tannenbaum actually, you know, allowed Vince to use the private jet so that he could go to North Carolina to go to, you know, commencement and then was able to come back. So the timeline here is that he arrived on campus by 8:30 a.m. So you can imagine, right, that it's from Philly to North Carolina, probably an hour-long flight. So he's probably getting to the airport probably like 7 o'clock and waking up even earlier before that. But whatever, he gets to the campus by 8:30. He's there for maybe like 40 minutes, and then he returns and gets back to Philly, lands around 12:30, and gets to the arena by about 1 o'clock. So he, and the game, by the way, that game was played 5:30 p.m. in the afternoon. So there was enough time for him to recuperate. You know, this is, for example, just to put into context, like obviously different situations, but when Fred was expecting Fred Jr., the second child, when Fred Jr. came, like, the schedule for him was way crazier than this. Like, he was in between cities, driving between cities, flying between cities, staying overnight at the hospital, taking a nap before a game, hitting 7 threes against the Bucks. Like, you know, like there's almost, it's hard to correlate these things, but at the same time, like this is the timeline. And, it's just unfortunate that, you know, the circumstances were what they were just because, it's just a lingering point of bitterness. Like recently, Charles Oakley did an interview, I think, on Tim and Sid, and was asked about it. And Oakley said, quote, no doubt that the Raptors win game 7 if Vince skipped out on the commencement. And Oakley said that Vince made the right decision for himself, but it wasn't necessarily a team decision. And,
right.
And Vince, you know, he says he doesn't regret doing it. He says, I got to fulfill the ultimate high and the ultimate low all in one day. But yeah, like, I don't know. What are your thoughts on this situation? Because it sucks. I don't like prying people into people's private lives, but at the same time, before Game 7, I could see why people are upset.
Yeah, I mean, I fully respect the decision. I mean, just from my own personal experience, I didn't care too much to go to my graduation, but I went because, you know, at the end of the day, I know it meant a lot to my parents mm-hmm. because, you know, they came to this country, they sacrificed a lot to come here, and that was like a big moment for them, right?
Yeah.
And so that's why, so I can completely see why he wanted to do that for his mom. And so, yeah, I don't have any complaints about him doing that at all. But I do see the other side of it. I mean, I remember reading a while back that Vince said, oh, you know, he asked, you know, the guys on the team if anyone had a problem with it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no one said anything back then. But I also remember Alvin Williams saying, yeah, that's true. Vince did ask us, but it was also a situation where we're not going to tell another man what to do in a situation like that.
That's fair.
And we just hoped that he would make the best decision,
mm-hmm.
You know, for the team kind of thing. And so, yeah, absolutely. You know, he did what was best for him. I think it is unfair to associate the graduation with it, but at the same time, you know, one thing I've always said is, there are so many sort of permutations and combinations of how things can affect your gameplay, which is why I think in general, NBA players, most NBA players love to keep a routine.
Right, right.
And so I think when you do things to throw off that routine, then I think the likelihood of that, of having an off night just goes up.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I think at the end of the day, he did what was best for him. When you consider all the factors, was it in the best interest of the team? Maybe not.
Right. Look at you saying computations and permutations. Like you're a Clyde, real Clyde over here. Like I'm watching the MSG broadcast. Yeah, absolutely, man. And I just think it's kind of lame to focus that much about it. I mean, I would much rather focus on his approach in the game and how he played. And if you want to say Vince didn't play his best game, that Vince didn't necessarily play the type of game that you need to win a game 7, I could entertain those arguments. I could see it. And ultimately what we're talking about is basketball. This is not basketball. This is life. And sometimes life is real messy, you know? Yeah. You have situations where the biggest game of your career is also probably one of the biggest days of your life. And so, yeah, I just ultimately feel for him, you know what I mean? And for the family and whatever. The rest of the Vince stuff, I mean, I think at the time people really thought about superstars in a different way than they do now. There's more of an acceptance now of superstars doing what they want. Superstars basically making their decisions and it's expected and no one's shocked. I think people really, especially in Toronto, like we just didn't fully grasp that at the time. So small things like Vince's mom wanting a parking spot or some shit like that. Like people really did... yeah, I don't know, but
yeah, that was wild.
Yeah, why couldn't you have a parking spot, man?
Yeah, like what's the big deal?
What's going on?
You
can't comp her parking? Like, come on, bro. What are you saying?
Yeah.
That's more on the Raptors than it is on Vince, all right? I don't care.
Yeah, no, for sure. Absolutely. And I remember, like, for me, again, you know, being in Dubai uh-huh. and seeing nothing but highlights, like, to come to Canada in 2002 and then all I was seeing was all this negativity about Vince. I didn't get it.
Yeah.
And then I'm seeing stuff about the parking spot and I'm like, why do they care?
Yo, that's the smallest thing to be worrying about, man.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, thankfully the organization's in a lot better shape now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they recognize that there's moments to treat stars like stars, and there's moments to that everyone's got to band together. And I think they do a great job of managing that. And that's why I think they're a great, happy bunch of defending champions right now.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes, you know, good karma, like, it comes around, you know, because, what, 18 years later, the Raptors are in game 7 against Philly, this time in Toronto, very, very close game. Really, the score is very close, too, because game 7 last year was 92-90, this game 87-88.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, you know, you get the reactions in reverse. Recently, someone on the timeline put out a video of Sixers fans, because I've seen so many reaction videos of the shot from Raptor fans. There was a really good compilation that the Globe and Mail made of just fans all over Canada and their reactions, and it's so wonderful, and I love watching all those videos from the Raptor side. But I was reminded of how it was from the Sixers side, and you know, it's good. You know, it's fair. Now Toronto and Philadelphia are even. Plus, we got Kyle Lowry. So, yeah, no beef at all with Philly anymore, man. Just Embiid's a fraud. But, you know, whatever.
Yep. I'm with you on that.
Yeah. Cool. All right, V. Thanks for doing this pod. Do you have, since you're a diehard, longtime Raptor fan, is there a classic game that you would recommend that I should also check out?
Oh, man. A classic game to check out.
It doesn't always have to be on this scale. Like, obviously, look, it's the first one I did was Jordan, the win over Jordan's Bulls, and then this game against Philly. Like, obviously, those are two of the most memorable and significant games in franchise history. It could be something simpler, like, I don't know, the Donyell Marshall tall threes game or some shit like that. So.
Anything? So one of my personal favorites is from the Chris Bosh era, the game where the Raptors were in Boston and I think they had like a 50-40-90 night.
Oh, really?
Heck, they might have had a 60-40-90 night. And they played incredibly well in Boston. Mm. This was when, you know, all those Bosh KG comparisons were being made, and, you know, this was that Celtics team. And there was one play towards the end of the third quarter where Jose's bringing the ball down the court and the Celtics are on a run and KG is just barking at him the whole way.
Yep. Yeah, and he's on all fours too.
Yeah. And then Jose ends up having an assist to, I mean, I want to say Anthony Parker, might have been Jason Capone or someone who hits a three. And then Jose just tells him to shut up and go back to the bench kind of thing.
Okay.
And the Raptors end up winning that game, so that is a personal favorite of mine. If that's available somewhere, I would definitely go back and watch that one.
Right. By the way, I found this game. So the way you describe it, it sounds like the Raptors blew them out. And when you look at the shooting percentages, the Raptors shot 58% from the field. They shot 71% from three. They shot 15 of 21. Carlos Delfino, big game, 5 threes off the bench. And they shot 19 of 19 from the free throw line. And yet, the Raptors won this game by two. Is that possible, man? Okay.
Yeah, wow. I mean, that's what happens when you play in Boston, though.
Fair enough. All right.
That's what you got to do to win in Boston.
I'm gonna track this thing down. It's a little hard, admittedly, to get video of full games, you know, from before 2012, but definitely will put this on the list and check it out. And listeners, if you have any classic games, classic Raptor games, win or loss, whatever, just any significant ones that come to mind for you, let me know on Twitter, at William_Lou. You can either message me, just mention me, or direct message. I'll check. And yeah, so V, big thanks to you for coming on the second ever Classic Raptors Reaction Podcast. What do you want to plug? What do you want to say to the listeners before we sign off?
I'm doing my usual thing at Complex, so you can check out my work there. Besides that, man, props to you. You're doing your thing. Love all the pods that you put out, all the content. So just keep doing that, man. Appreciate you.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And yeah, be back next week with more podcast content.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started. Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.